Word of mouth.
This is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Virginia Prescott. Coming up, the Olympics pre-endorsement. The origin stories of Olympic glory from the days when athletes really were considered gods. And not to be outdone in the dramatic competition department, a backstage look at a drag queen pageant. Plus, a French-Finnish band catapults from four songs on MySpace to sold-out concerts in weeks. We hear some coping strategies and songs from The Doe. But first, a boom in blackouts. America's electric grid is badly in need of an upgrade. Power outages are becoming more frequent due to extreme summer heat and increasingly erratic weather. After storms last month, more than 300,000 people in the mid-Atlantic states went without power, some for as long as a week. The blackout renewed criticism that the power industry lags behind in smarter grid investments and innovations. The decision of who should make those multi-billion dollar investments is in gridlock, mired in the public-private sector debate dominating American politics. Lisa Marganelli explores the power struggle in an article for Pacific Standard Magazine. Lisa, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
So blackouts are more frequent than they used to be. By how much? Is it quantified?
Yes, it is. There's something called the Eaton Blackout Tracker, which has found that there are... In 2011, there were 3,000 outages. In 2008, there were just 2,169. And the number of people affected by the blackouts has changed. The number of big blackouts affecting more than 50,000 people a year has doubled since the 90s. And the drain on the economy ranges from $80 billion to $180 billion a year from blackouts. And that's an estimate from Masoud Amin, who's at the University of Minnesota and has spent decades watching the grid and making estimates about its effects.
That's a big loss. Do we know what kind of investments and costs would have to be made to bring the grid up to snuff?
Well, we need big investments. Roughly, I think the amount is around $24 billion per year over the next 20 years, which sounds like a lot. But when you think about how much of our economy is underwritten by the electrical grid, it's not that much. The other thing is that these investments of between $17 and $24 billion over the next 20 years would probably save about $49 billion in outage costs per year and perhaps another $20 billion in increased energy efficiency. So in a sense, by making these investments, we could save money. But what we don't have is the political will to really make these investments across the grid. And these investments take sort of two forms. One is that we need like a lot of backbone infrastructure built, and those are sort of major investments. And then we need a lot of a certain amount of neighborhood-by-neighborhood investment to make the grid smart, to make it very responsive to ups and downs in power production and power use.
So a lot of money in the backbone, but also a lot of sort of smaller, ultra-local power support? Is that what I'm understanding?
Yeah.
Okay. I know we've had a couple of very bad storms up here in New Hampshire in the past few years, ice storms and summer storms. People here are buying generators, or many have gone off the grid. So is that a workable solution to America's power problem?
Well, it is. If you want to keep your own lights on, yes. But in terms of our whole project of keeping everyone's lights on, no, it's not. If we make the grid smarter, we can then take more power from solar, from wind. We can let people install generators in their homes that, for example, heat your water, create heat, and create electricity, and then you can throw that back on the grid and sort of cooperate with the grid. But we need a much more complex grid to be able to accept that. Without that, with each person kind of withdrawing to their own gated community and they're, you know, going off the grid, what you have is you have people relying on the grid in good times and then separating from the grid in bad times. And that doesn't keep, you know, the grid is almost like a living organism. It's been described as the world's most complicated machine.
Lisa Marganelli's with us. She's a research fellow at the New America Foundation who writes about energy policy for major publications, most recently about America's failing electric grid and the political deadlock that has surrounded investment in power infrastructure. The article is from Pacific Standard Magazine. Well, okay, let's get back to that political will. You sort of illuminate that by giving us some of the history of the centralized infrastructure that does provide power in the U.S. How did that initial investment come to be?
Well, you know, it's a really interesting thing. In the when we first started electrifying homes and businesses back at the turn of the century, they basically power companies would start up and they would find a little network of people who they thought could pay, people and businesses, and they'd string some wires around. So you didn't really have a grid. Everything looked kind of like an asterisk, you know. It wasn't a grid. It was just there was a power source and then there were wires running out to the individual light bulbs, basically. And then as power sort of became a little, you know, as there became a few appliances, a little bit more than a light bulb, you saw new power companies going in and installing power, but really only in the richer areas or in the upper middle class areas. And when FDR came in as governor of New York, he made this promise, what he called the waffle iron campaign, which was that every house should be able to have a waffle iron, which is such a funny dream for, you know, now it's like, what, a waffle iron? Who wants a waffle iron? But, of course, we have everything in the world now because basically he set up this structure saying, look, if you electric companies want to have he and other governors at the same time set up this structure saying to the electric companies, look, if you want to have a monopoly on customers, you need to set up lines so that you provide the power to every single customer. And so they basically set up this system where they had a regulator in each state for power, and that regulator made decisions, but they awarded all the customers in the state or in that area in a specific area to one power company. So they awarded monopolies, and in exchange, they had regulators. And they required that everybody be served. And so this waffle iron campaign then kind of grew into FDR's broader vision of putting in the TVA and the Bonneville Power Authority, you know, these huge hydroelectric dams that provided power to everybody and got the government more into the field of both controlling floods and supplying power, producing power. But that essential relationship of the government being a regulator and requiring that power companies serve everyone was sort of the start of this more democratic sense of power. And it also explains how we had private investment and this public-private partnership that has really been very successful in delivering power to us up until relatively recently when these outages started. And what's happened over the years is that the power company itself, because it's regulated, the power companies, they have many different sorts of agendas, and they have different kinds of regulation also. The kind of liberal idea that animated the grid in the beginning, which was that we would have power for all and that would be good for everyone, has kind of fallen away. The power companies themselves invest very, very little in research and development, about 0.17 of their profits. It's like on par with the dog food industry. It's very, very, I mean, they're basically a low-tech industry with a very, very high-tech function. And over the past 15 years, they've invested a lot less. So what's happening is kind of the liberal idea is running out, and we need to invest.
Well, it's a public-private partnership that began that way, now in gridlock. Lisa, I really want to thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
Lisa Marganelli, she's a research fellow at the New America Foundation. She's also author of the book Oil on the Brain, Petroleum's Long, Strange Trip to Your Tank. And she writes about energy policy for major publications like The Atlantic and The New York Times. And we spoke with her today about her article, Electric Forecast Calls for Increasing Blackouts. That's from Pacific Standard Magazine. And you'll find a link to more and more of the contemporary politics at wordofmouthradio.org. Now coming up, a Finnish-French band's meteoric rise from songs online to sold-out shows. Stay with us for The Dough when Word of Mouth continues.